All right, normally we play the Seattle Spirit theme, and we're going to play the Seattle Spirit theme, but I want to tell you I have a press release in my hands. This came from the Edmonds City Park incident. It involves a 5-year-old girl and a man dressed as a woman in a restroom. And it stinks like Seattle Spirit. So just got this from a friend of mine who works in media. Good friend of the show and a good Christian man and a good dad. And he works in the media. Just sent this to me. And young Tom, I just sent you a note about this. The Edmonds Police Department is investigating a reported incident that occurred on July 9th, 2018. That's a little while ago. July 9th, 2018 at the Edmonds City Park located at 600 3rd Avenue South in Edmonds. A 5-year-old female disclosed to her mother that while in a public restroom at the park, she was inappropriately touched by a man wearing women's clothing. The 5-year-old was visiting Edmonds City Park with her father and siblings when she entered the women's restroom. She went into a bathroom stall where she stated a male wearing women's clothing touched her private areas. She did not initially tell her father about this incident, and there was a lengthy delay in a formal report being made to the police department. The father recalled seeing the individual in question and provided the following description. Male or female with masculine features. 19 to 25 years of age. Long black hair with light colored skin. The individual was wearing a purple butterfly shirt and shorts. The father stated that he was at the entrance to the restroom when he observed the individual in question. He reported that at no time were the person of interest and his daughter in the restroom at the same time. There are several details still being investigated in an effort to corroborate and substantiate this report. In the interest of public safety and an abundance of caution, the Edmonds Police Department would like to alert the general public about this incident. So, don't think that a 5-year-old girl made this up. Sorry. It's not in the minds of 5-year-old girls to make up such things. Is this a condemnation of everybody with gender dysphoria? Do I even know if this person had gender dysphoria? Nope. It's the answer to both questions. Here's what I do know. Is if I was a child molester and I wanted to go out and do something like this, I know the state I'd choose. I know the cities I'd choose. So yeah, it's pure Seattle spirit because this madness started here. This, by the way, is why I will remind you that it is illegal for an adult to reveal their naked body to a child. And you are within your rights to prevent that from happening. And it's my understanding it's a misdemeanor and you could make a citizen's arrest. This is also why at no time will any male, dressed as a female or not, enter a locker room where any of my juvenile family members are at. Ever. Abundance of caution? Yeah. But also a recollection of actual facts, biological like. Not a statement against people with gender dysphoria at all. A bunch of people who are transgender listening to the show. And they're some of our best listeners, and they've called in. It's a statement of this is inevitable that someone would do this. Sean Whitcomb, and I should add, obviously, 5 years old. Good Lord. I hope you are okay. Sean Whitcomb is in a tough space. He's the public information officer for the Seattle Police Department. Remember this case? It was just a couple days ago. Tracy Taylor, who works in this building, reported it first as a traffic thing. It was an RV fire. Started as an RV fire. Then we learned that it involved a woman who was living in the RV, obviously a derelict RV. She was living with a boyfriend who apparently was assaulting her, according to police reports, as I understand them. She'd called the police. The police responded. The guy got in the RV and rammed the SWAT team. So apparently they brought the SWAT team out because he would not respond to the cops. He rammed the SWAT vehicle, which apparently started the fire. Sean Witkin was on with Ron and Don on Car Radio 3 to 7 yesterday. The public information officer for the Seattle Police, and he wants us to believe this.
There's been a lot of criticism, you know, of our organization that we are taking too much of a hands-off approach when it comes to crime and homeless people, and this idea that we're going to turn a blind eye to crime and homeless people. I think this incident from this morning pretty clearly illustrates that is not the case.
No, it doesn't, Sean. I'm sorry, Sean. I know you're in a tough spot. I know that you work for politicians. I know you've got a job. I know you're committed to the department, but it doesn't prove anything like that. It proves the opposite. A, ladies living in a derelict RV that we've somehow allowed to be all around our streets. B, I'm going to bet there's drug use going on in that RV, Sean Witkin. C, there's open-air drug dealing all around our city. And Sean Witkin, you know that. D, property crime has risen to such a high rate that people don't even report it anymore. And you know that. You know people have stopped reporting it. E, the people who move here understand the rules. They know property crimes aren't prosecuted. They know they can break into cars with impunity. They know they can park these RVs wherever they want. In fact, I called the Washington State Patrol the other night because there was an RV parked basically on the on-ramp to the 509 South off of East Marginal Way. It was right on the curve there. Someone's going to hit this. Guys parked 1 inch from the street. Last I checked, that hadn't been taken care of. Maybe it has by now. Sean Witkin, to say that this proves that you guys are not forced to take a hands-off approach to the homeless, it proves the opposite. Speaking of police and priorities, there is an ordinance, noise ordinance, that's gone into effect that is going to be able to pull people over with loud tailpipes.
New ordinance amends current code to allow enforcement when vehicle exhaust noises, e.g. mufflers, can be clearly heard by a person of normal hearing at a distance of 75 feet or more from the vehicle itself.
The people that we're looking at trying to enforce this law against are the people who are cruising Alki at all hours of the night back and forth on their motorcycle with straight pipes, or their car that has modifications on it to just be loud.
Okay, so I'm all in favor. That's fine. Those things are too loud, and, you know, there is some limit to that. But Sean Wickham, again, that's a task force on noise coming from the tailpipes of cars and motorcycles. Where's the RV task force? Where's the we know you're cooking meth in the RV task force? You are told to take a hands-off approach to street people, not homeless people, to street people. We do have people starting fires in jungles accidentally often. We do constantly have people crossing I-90 and I-5 at the interchange up around the eastbound I-90 area. We constantly have that, Sean. Please, I know you're in a tough spot, but don't go out and be clown yourself. You're a police officer. Please don't be clown yourself with statements like that. Gino Rossi is going to face off against Kim Schreier, Cuomo's Joel Moreno.
No matter which one emerges, it'll be the most far-left opponent I will have ever had.
I don't think anybody wins a trade war. You know, think about the aggressors and everything from apples to airplanes. 40% of our economy is really tied to trade.
Trailing Rossi is Dr. Kim Schreier, a pediatrician campaigning on health care, and she's already taking shots at Rossi.
Did you see Dino Rossi come out against Trump when he imposed tariffs?
Yep. He just did in the previous soundbite, Kim Cryer.
Would be bad for the farmers in our district.
She already has a nickname, Kim Screamer. I'll tell you why.
No!
Dr. Screamer.
Of course not. Because Rossi has stayed in hiding this whole campaign. He will not tell you what he'll do in Congress.
Dino Rossi is the most accessible politician in this state. Kim Schreier was so far to the left, truly, I'm not making this up, that the stranger would not endorse her. Speaking of the left and madness, the Sound Transit people want to pretend to put together a citizen advisory board. They are going to put some citizens on it. I'm just telling you that the so-called CEO has some people handpicked. Let's get you on this board, please, okay? Text the word SCAM to 800-465-8770. I will send you a link to where you can apply to be on the Sound Transit Citizen Advisory Board. Much more to follow on the Todd Herman Show on AM 770 KTTH. I'm continuing to explore my new theory that the most powerful propaganda in the era of social media is silence. And I think I have yet more proof that this is the case. This is developing in the media to be, or for me to be, a very interesting look at politics and the confluence of media and politics. And how do you do propaganda when fact-checking exists and when social media exists and people can argue against you? The media is choosing silence. It's a brilliant tactic. Darcis Bellevue's own heart. Is it Bellevue or Redmond? East Side. The most powerful propaganda in the era of social media is silence. I've been thinking a lot about this. I want to get into this real quick. Some text messages, 800-465-8770. On the topic of Sean Whitcomb, the public information officer, wanting us to believe that they are, in fact, not told to be hands-off with street people. John, who I know to be an LEO. Hey, Todd, don't let your listeners be fooled. No administrator, nor even the PIO, will ever admit SPD has essentially depoliced since the DOJ started coming after them. I've been told this repeatedly by street cops and others who've seen it, John. One other message in the text line, 800-465-8770. Todd, we don't need any task forces. We need law enforcement personnel paying attention and acting within the law. I'm up here in Skagit County. Let me tell you, there are enough nice burner cars running around with modified exhaust pipes with decibel rating ear-shattering noises. Yeah, no, I know that. I know that. Then I want to lead this segment with this email. Okay, so I am developing this theory that in the world of social media, where you and I can do our own research and push back against media, their most powerful tool against us is silence. And Aaron writes to me, "Whoa!" is the subject line. If you will be next if you don't stand up against the forces that are taking InfoWars off the air. I will continue to seek the truth and the freedom of choices that often led me to listen to powerful information from InfoWars. You've just said as many bigoted anti-gay statements that the PLC would deem hate speech. Because you don't give a rip about AGA and the attack on freedom, you'll be next. Banned on Twitter, Facebook, you name it. We need to stand together, and you ripping on AGA is causing more division. You, of all of a host, I thought would be more understanding in the vigorous resourcing into info and news gathering that Information Wars has done. So then he goes on to some theories of Joneses around 9/11 and pedophiles in large amounts all around the country and shift off into camps in 10 to 15 years. You should listen to IW and have a clear understanding straight from the source. Okay, and here's the thing. Aaron, I stood up for Jones today and yesterday. Not his reporting, because I think the reporting's junk. Sorry. But because he is not being taken off of Facebook for his reporting, it's because they're using something called hate speech, which cannot be described. It cannot be defined. And yes, I said, Aaron, that absolutely people like us are next. Absolutely. You bet. And yes, they're giving in to pressure from the Democrats to take Jones off of Facebook and YouTube. Yes, they are. Yes, there's 10,000 worse things on Facebook and YouTube. Yes, I see where this is going, and I've been suggesting for 3 years a reverse boycott of Facebook specifically because they did it to me. Okay, Facebook screwed me before they screwed Jones. Now, in a smaller way, it cost me less money, only millions. It's costing Jones a lot more than that. But just because I don't give a rip about Alex Jones doesn't mean that I don't give a rip about watching him deplatformed because of so-called hate speech. Now, see, the left. The most powerful form of propaganda in a social media age is silence. They're trying to silence Jones. And yes, it will graduate up into, well, why is Fox News allowed? In fact, that's already happening. It is. There's already people saying, well, if Alex Jones has been taken off, why isn't Fox News taken off? So the powerful form of propaganda is silencing, but that's not really propaganda. The propaganda I'm talking about is the silence of the media. Let me give you an example. This is really hard to listen to. Okay? This is a young African-American man. He is in a car that's been pulled over. For whatever reason, he's sitting in the passenger seat. And I don't know why he's doing the talking and getting the ticket when the driver is not. But listen to the way he treats this cop. And yes, there's a point about this to the silence of propaganda, or the propaganda of silence.
All right, Mr. Warren, what I have here is a citation, okay? It's going to be for what we discussed, the seatbelt, okay?
Yeah, perfect.
What I've done is I've assigned you a court date of 20 August at 10 o'clock in the morning if you choose to appear in court.
Yeah.
If not, you have up until that date to
comply with the citation. I hear you loud and clear.
What I'm going to ask you to do is sign the bottom of this. I've signed you without admission of guilt, just stating that you have, in fact, received the citation.
Hey, nah, man, I have my seatbelt on.
And comply.
You can try that, I have my seatbelt on.
Okay.
So what?
Are you refusing to sign?
Do I have to sign it?
I'm giving you the option to sign it. Are you?
Do I have to sign it? If I don't sign it, will I go to jail?
Are you refusing to sign it?
If I don't sign it, will I go to jail?
No.
Are you sure?
What did I just say?
So if I don't sign it, you will not pull me out this car and take me to jail?
That is correct.
You will not issue a warrant out later so they can take me to jail later?
If you do not comply with the citation or appear in court...
Boy,
on
your
the
breath
stink
like... Man, oh my mama.
You will have a warrant.
All right, man, give me the man.
Okay, are you going to sign it or no?
I'm going to sign it, you dumb duh. What you thought? If I said give me it, I'm going to sign it.
Well, then sign it, sir.
Give me the pen, man. I don't want to reach in your hand and you pop me. You know, you motherfuckers, man. Courts.
So I think you get the point. Do you? The propaganda of silence is that interactions like that, racial or not, and I have no idea if that African-American man is a racist, no idea. I can see he hates cops. Those interactions happen hundreds of times per city, per day. White people, black people, Hispanic people, people don't like it when they get touched by the cops, get pulled over. The media will not provide the context around this. It's a propaganda of silence. They will not provide the context that every other interaction like that that's gone on today, no one's been shot and no one's been beaten and no one's been spat upon, no one's been nightsticked. That's one example. The other examples we've talked about on the show, your friends don't know Barack Obama allowed the Taliban to ship opioids into our country through the southern border. That's a verified fact through Politico with named reporting and named sources. He did the same with Hezbollah, allowed them to bring in cocaine through our southern border. The DOJ, FBI, Department of Homeland Security were about to shut that down. Obama, they were about to indict. Obama stopped it. Your friends don't know that. That's propaganda of silence. That's how you do it in an information age. You don't share the information. That way it can't be fact-checked and argued. And only in our little conservative bubble is it even known. Let me give you another example. This is this woman, an actress named Mila Kunis. She was the mean girl on That 70s Show. Not the redheaded girl, but the mean girl. Listen to this.
Things. Are you still donating money?
Always.
Is it Planned Parenthood?
Yeah, but wait, do you know what happened
with
afterwards?
Mike Pence's name?
People started giving donations to the opposing side, which I didn't even know there was one.
That lady didn't know there was an opposing side to Planned Parenthood. Propaganda of silence. It's a profound realization that when information can be argued with, don't give people the information. Okay, I went long on that because I am big on theories like that. It helps me understand what's going on in my world. So we'll come back on the Todd Herman Show. Nancy Pelosi has a brand new organizing theory for this election, and you are going to love it. So this got lost in the political haze, but yet another judge, this is a little bit old, but it hasn't been reported on, yet another judge is ordered the president to reinstate DACA. This happened a few days ago, and I mean to talk about it, but we've got the elections, everything going on. And this brings up this new organizing theory of Nancy Pelosi. And I want you to hear this, but I want us to remember something about DACA and about all the people who tried to virtue signal off of this. You had the sideshow Bob virtue signaling.
There are more than 17,000 Dreamers in the state of Washington alone. They were brought to this country as children by their parents through no fault of their own. DACA has allowed them to remain in this country, to work legally, to open bank accounts, purchase cars and homes without deportation.
Okay, this was an executive order created and conceived by one man, Barack Obama, and foisted upon the country in contravention of law and the rule of law. Now, the version of this for adults has already been struck down. But keep in mind that it's the invention of one guy, one president, and executive order, because that was his interpretation, which is farcical, of the law. So you got your attorney general, who is really just a hack and a very dangerous man, you know, virtue signaling to get donations to run for governor. Then you had Jelly Durka, who has done nothing for Seattle, who's an utterly failed mayor.
If the president says he will be rolling back the protections for DACA, we say not just no, we say hell no.
Right. And she said,
we will not help in any program that is going to take these people from our community.
Now, we can have all sorts of productive discussions about the fact that there are people in the DACA program who are both reasonable people and were brought here against their will, and that there's a lot of things that can be done on a case-by-case basis. We can have lots of discussions about that. We can also look at the math behind the way the media has covered this. The media has spent 995 minutes discussing negatively 9-1 immigration and Trump. 9-1 negative, 995 minutes. This is according to newsbusters.com or .org, pardon me. That's 4.5 hours of immigration coverage. It is about 44% of the total news coverage has been banging on Trump on immigration. So leave it to Nancy Pelosi to take this, which could be human. You could have discussions about individual people who deserve to stay. We could have discussions about how we could make sure that they never gain the right to vote, which is what I'm in favor of. You're here. You can stay. You got to pay a fine if you brought yourself here. If you were brought here, you can stay, but you don't get to bring in relatives. There's going to be no chain migration. You'd never get the right to vote. Sorry, you never do. Right? And I'd go so far as to say no federal benefits. Okay? I could see that. Of course, the Democrats can't go there. So leave it to Nancy Pelosi to find a way to go so far beyond the reasonable that the Republicans now have an opportunity to run based upon what Nancy herself has expressed. This is a little bit hard to hear, the audio quality wise. So you might want to turn up your radio because it's an astonishing statement.
We believe that we will have leverage when we win in November. And why that's important? Because it gives leverage to every family, to every mom who courageously brought her child across the desert to escape death, rape, gang violence, and the rest.
Right. So, the reason you should vote for the Democrats is to give leverage to illegal immigrants. Got it? So, she goes past the sob stories, and of course we can parse her statement to say, okay, so to escape rape, you gave your kids to coyotes to take them to the desert in the back of a trunk in the personage of people who also happen to be sex traffickers. Got it. Okay. Makes sense so far. But she's willing to take this up to this level that you vote for Democrats to give leverage to people who broke the law to come here. So you leave it to Pelosi to take something where they'd actually gained some leverage. I mean, turnout-wise for Democrats, not in terms of actual votes. I mean, not in terms of actual changing in public opinion. That hasn't happened, and it's not going to, because people are absolutely dug in. But the media will not look at that as extreme. They won't look at that statement as extreme. So keeping with the propaganda of silence thing I've been talking about, that the media just wants to disappear stories that don't meet the narrative, that's the new propaganda of choice, the propaganda of silence. The media instead wants to warn us that one of the most conservative states in the country, Kansas, is about to elect a conservative, but not just a conservative.
They're concerned that Kobach and his incredibly conservative positions on immigration especially could actually hand the governor's seat to Democrats.
In another hotly contested race, there's still no victory in the Kansas Republican primary for governor. President Trump made a late endorsement of controversial candidate Kris Kobach, a hard right, staunchly anti-immigration candidate.
So he's controversial and hard right. Nancy Pelosi says, vote for Democrats to give leverage to illegal immigrants. Mainstream, it's just Nancy Pelosi, you know, good old-fashioned Democrat. Then you got this guy, a Michigan Democratic governor, who supports what?
Do you think we should abolish ICE?
I think we need a governor who's going to stand up to the federal government when they're violating our rights.
Do you think we should abolish ICE, though?
I think that ICE is doing a fundamentally cruel and unconstitutional, undemocratic.
So you think we should abolish it?
I think our governor needs to stand up.
Oh, really? That's not what your thing says, Mr. Tom, the smart producer man, but that's fine. We'll go out and come back and wrap up the day with personal note.
Down on Main Street.
Welcome back to the Todd Herman Show on AM 770 KTTH and on the Greater East Side 94.5 FM. If you haven't got the podcast yet, can I ask that you try it? Just text the word podcast to 800-465-8770. And a huge, huge ask, request, favor of you. If you're listening on the podcast now, can you pop over and give it the review you think it reserves or deserves? If it's 5 stars, so be it. And if you don't like the podcast, I guess you wouldn't be listening. Maybe that's just self-serving of me. On a personal note tonight, I think there is often a logic in life, and I often think that there are minor comparisons to God's work within our own. Let me give you the example in my faith, the Christian faith, of God becoming human, separating part of himself. This is the great mystery to many of the Trinity. It is, I guess, a mystery. Becoming part God, part human, and sending a child here, his only begotten son, begotten, not made. And even non-Christians, of course, know the rest of the Christian tradition. And I often imagine God looking at his son. And, of course, God has the ability to have pre-knowledge and to see where things are going and to not look at things in a linear timeline. But I often imagine that God set that aside, because I think of God as willing and able to change his own nature or her own nature, his, what the Bible says. And to observe as a parent with great trepidation of what Jesus was going through and the difficulty that Jesus had. Now, of course, Christ was perfect and sin free, so he didn't have the same challenges that we had, but he witnessed them. He had friends who had these challenges. So then I think of seeing Christ on the cross from the perspective of God and the anger, I think, that the Lord would feel at what was being done to him and his son. And that's the nature of the Trinity. But then welcoming Jesus back, of course, into his arms. And I think of that, and I think of these full circle moments that we have in life. The other night, my daughter shared with me something really hard for a daughter to share with a dad. And it's, took a little coaxing. But we sat there on this couch, and my daughter shared these feelings with me, and super proud of her, super brave to share these feelings with me. And I had this vision of my mom up late at night with me and me expressing some feelings that it took her coaxing to get me to confess. You know, kids, they want to establish their own identities, so they move themselves aside. But I felt this full circle moment, and I'm looking at my absolutely beautiful daughter, who, of course, in my eyes, is angelic. I mean, she has her challenges. And it's just 13 for kids, for girls, is a hard time. So I'm looking at her, and I want to tell her, you know, you're the same kid whose diaper I changed on this very couch. Sorry, honey, but I did. You're the very kid I held here in my arms as you fell asleep, swaddled from the hospital. The same kid who did a jumping monkey thing on me right here. You're that same person right now, but you're becoming an adult. And I looked at this full circle moment, and for a minute, literally, I felt like I had embodied my mom having these conversations with me. And for a minute, I was like, transported. And I think that you get these moments in life that compare to the spiritual. For a moment, I was observing. Now, I was there. Trust me. I was emotional. I was available. I was feeling it. But I was also, for a minute, moved into my mom and to how she felt. And I had this incredible desire to go to her and say, thank you for staying up with me. And thank you for listening to me. And I know you needed the sleep, and I know you had work the next morning, but bless you for doing it. But I also understood, I don't need to say thank you to her. My daughter doesn't need to thank me for that. This is something I chose. This is something I cherish. This is something I'm learning from. And of course, I thought of something else. I thought of a time when my grandpa, a very proud man, not an arrogant man, understand me, proud of his accomplishments, a guy who dropped out of school in eighth grade, but was on the board of a bank, helped start an energy company in Spokane, was on their board, put kids through college. Every single one of his kids has a college degree. A couple of them have master's degrees, and my grandpa would never let you forget that. But a man of dignity, who in his elder years had gotten dementia. And the last time I saw my grandpa as a living human being, went to see him in his retirement home. He got to meet my daughter. She was then about, 3 months old. He got to meet her. He got to hold her. And this was days before my grandpa passed. But when we entered the room, my grandpa was in the bathroom. And he was having problems. And he needed to be cleaned up. And I did it. Now, you think, wow, it's a grown man cleaning a grown man who'd had some problems in the bathroom. And you'd think that's bizarre. And at that moment, yeah, it's a little weird. But during that, my grandpa apologized. And I laughed. I said, Grandpa, I owe you this. This is my pleasure. So I cleaned my grandpa up. I pulled up his underwear and his pants. And then he had trouble walking out of that bathroom because it was tight. There were two of us in there, and he was having trouble mobilizing his legs. And so I picked him up. And there he is, cradled in my arms. And I carried him back to bed. Now, my wife and my daughter were outside during this process because my grandpa had risen to say hello to them, which is how we learned about the problem. You stand when a lady enters the room, my grandpa's perspective. So I carried him to the bed, and he said in his way, because he could only say two words, you betcha. Two words he could say. He was excited that I was carrying him. I looked at him and said, this is kind of fun, Grandpa. You carried me. And then it happened. That full circle moment. I can't say that I remembered being in my grandpa's arms, but I've seen enough pictures of me in my grandpa's arms that I suddenly felt that grandfatherly love. It was the reverse. All of a sudden, I was feeling grandfatherly towards this man. We get these full circle moments in life. And I think they mimic the divine. And I think if we open our hearts, you'll see that they're placed here before us to learn. Placed before us to learn that to be a parent is to love in ways you didn't think you could. And to truly love in ways that you don't know if you ever can again. Now, think again about God observing his son at Calvary. This is the Todd Herman Show. We are every weekday, 3 to 6 p.m. I will see you tomorrow at 3 o'clock. Be well, be strong, be kind.